You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, July 19, 2017.
It's not so much that the controversy is what makes the show interesting, is that we couldn't make a show that is about us and our lives without it being controversial.
The producer of a legendary Bloomington Public Access television show returns to advocate for atheist spirituality. More on that later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear how Facebook scammers are stepping up their game on a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
This week, Carrier Corporation will lay off 300 of its Indianapolis furnace factory employees. The move comes 6 months after President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence stated they had made a deal with Carrier in order to prevent their outsourcing American jobs to Mexico. The air conditioning and heating manufacturing company said in a statement today that it continues to honor its 2016 commitment to continue the employment of approximately 1,100 workers in Indianapolis. In a written statement to WFHB, Carrier Corporation, which is a subsidiary of United Technologies, wrote, quote, as previously announced, in total, this transition will impact approximately 600 Indianapolis jobs over the next several months. The impacted employees will have an opportunity for employment across United Technologies manufacturing operations, unquote. Robert James is president of United Steelworkers Indianapolis office, the union to which many of Carrier's workers belonged.
We were in the meeting when the president came in and gave that announcement at Carrier that over 1,100 jobs were going to be saved, and that was wrong. There's only 730 jobs that are going to be saved on the inside of the Carrier facility. The other 500-and-something jobs are headed to Monterrey, Mexico.
James said Carrier isn't alone in its decision to relocate its manufacturing.
It's not only Carrier, it's also Rexnord. Rexnord, which is about a mile from Carrier, are losing 300 jobs. They are completely shutting down, also going to Monterrey, Mexico.
James said the layoffs at Carrier's Indianapolis production facility will begin tomorrow and that a second round of layoffs is scheduled for December 22nd, 3 days before Christmas.
Well, I think it's a shame that when you put corporate greed over people, when you're more worried about pleasing shareholders. Carrier was not a company that was losing money, nor was Rexnord. They chose profits, and when you choose profits, that's just a damn shame. And it's also a shame that they are allowed to go over into a foreign country like Mexico and take advantage of those people and work them for $3 an hour because they didn't want to pay $22, but you want to bring it back into the United States and sell it. And the only thing that we can tell Carrier is to keep it made in America.
During the 2016 presidential elections, United Technologies, Carrier's parent company, had originally decided to fire 2,100 Indiana employees. But after winning the election, Trump and Pence struck a deal to save more than 700 employees from losing their jobs. In return, as one of his final acts as governor of Indiana, Pence arranged for Carrier to receive up to $7 million conditional state tax incentives and training grants. Carrier declined to speak with WFHB over the phone for this segment.
Members of the activist organization Hoosier Action were in Washington, D.C. today. A cadre from the organization marched on Republican lawmakers' offices where they staged protests against the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare. In an interview recorded immediately before protesters entered Indiana Republican Senator Todd Young's office today. Wes Kamenga stated that the group hopes to disrupt and dissuade lawmakers from voting to repeal the ACA.
The bill that the Republicans were looking to pass is wrong. That's not a matter of perspective. It's a matter of having a grip on the basics of right and wrong. And the fact that they considered it so seriously for so long is totally unconscionable. And so I would like for us to send a message to people, to the Republicans and to also just to people watching, that what they were looking to do is not okay.
Kamenga said he and other protesters are prepared to face detainment if that means their complaints about the repeal of the Affordable Care Act are heard.
The little get-together earlier today where they put, where everything was kind of, where people were told what to do, there's a way of kind of telling our healthcare story that we're going to do. We're going to do that and some chanting, and then most of us that are doing this, including myself and all the other people from Indiana are with us, are planning to risk arrest.
Hoosier Action member Jessica Martledge said protesters have trained in order to make sure they are compliant and safe when dealing with Capitol Hill police, but plan on making a disturbance in the senators' offices in order to draw attention to their opposition of the repeal of the Obamacare.
We are going to ask that they take a firm stance on not repealing the ACA. So the idea is that we go out into the hallway and sit down and chant and do whatever until they escort us out.
NPR reported at 3 p.m. today that Senators Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, and Susan Collins of Maine have signaled that they would not repeal Obamacare without a GOP-backed replacement, ostensibly tipping the scales against the passage of a measure to repeal the health care legislation in the Senate.
Monroe County Sheriff Brad Swain appeared before county commissioners this morning, explaining his decision last week to limit use of his department's naloxone supply to protect first responders. Swain told county commissioners his initial supply of nasally administered naloxone kits quickly diminished because many overdose victims needed multiple doses to be revived. By July 11th, Swain said he only had one kit for each officer.
In addition to that, public safety professionals were exposed to fentanyl and carfentanil. This prompted me to make a decision that my deputies needed as many as three doses available to them.
Swain said he then made attempts to replenish his supply by contacting multiple sources, including the Indiana Recovery Alliance, the Indiana Department of Health, and the National Sheriff's Association, but had no luck in procuring additional naloxone kits.
I also asked Bloomington Police who their supplier was. An administrator told me that they were running low and could use replacements as well.
Swain said he discovered he could get injectable naloxone through the Indianapolis nonprofit Overdose Lifeline and even explored training options. In the end, he said injection kits were simply not practical.
But when those were delivered, they were not the EpiPen type. They were a needle, a syringe, and a vial. And from my experience working with the fire department, even EMTs do not administer syringes. So we're at the paramedic level to administer that type of rescue.
Swain said the announcement that he was prioritizing first responders over victims led to a quick resupply of naloxone kits from the Monroe County Health Department. Swain then reversed his decision. He said if he had known there was a supply close by, he may not have given the order for deputies to prioritize naloxone for themselves and other first responders. Referencing conversations he'd had at an Indiana Sheriff's Association conference last week, Swain emphasized that many sheriffs are unsure of where to get naloxone. Swain references a specific conversation with the head of Indiana's naloxone distribution program.
He assured me that they had thousands upon thousands of units available. I explained to him that I didn't know this. Later on, I had conversations with a lot of other sheriffs at the conference, and they aren't aware that there are a lot of kits.
Swain said he's hopeful that what he termed this communication disconnect will be resolved. The Monroe County Sheriff finished his remarks before the county commissioners by stating that Monroe County is a leader in the state's efforts to address the opioid crisis.
I also want to let everyone know that I've supported the concept of providing assistance and solutions to the opioid crisis. My Corrections Center is a leader in the state in providing innovative treatment to substance abuse. We are partnering with local organizations to have a continuity of services when an inmate is released from jail, and one of our medical providers said Monroe County is setting the gold standard for the state. My jail commander and I fully intend to be a national leader in this endeavor.
Swain said that any potential delay in the supply chain of naloxone to the county would be addressed and rectified as soon as possible, with commissioners notified. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
This month marks the 25th anniversary of the first episode of Rocks, that is, or J&B on the Rocks, arguably the most controversial show ever to air on public access television in Bloomington. The program generated outrage and calls for its removal during its heyday in the early and mid-90s. It's also been one of the most popular programs on community access television services. WFHB News Director Joe Crawford caught up with one of the producers of Rocks, who recently returned to Bloomington in support of his newest provocative work. We bring you that story now in today's WFHB Community Report.
I'm Jay.
And I'm B.
And this is a joint.
This is a joint.
And we're going to smoke it now.
A joint endeavor here.
That is the intro to one of the most notorious episodes of Rocks, Episode 59. J&B get baked. J&B, that's Joe Nickel and Bart Everson, go on to smoke what at least looks like marijuana outside the Monroe County Courthouse. This is in 1994. They also interview the police chief, and a guest advises viewers how to avoid getting busted by the cops. And of course, they do smoke some more.
Gosh, here I sit with this bowl filled with this great marijuana. And you know what I'm going to do with it? I'm going to smoke it.
Now, if you have any marijuana in your own home, we can only encourage you to do the same.
J&B Get Baked was clearly a treat for some viewers, and the wellspring of distress for others. The director of the Governor's Commission for a Drug-Free Indiana accused J&B of, quote, the overt promotion of anarchy, an accusation they would, of course, go on to flaunt as a badge of honor. The show was all produced using taxpayer-purchased equipment at Bloomington Community Access Television in the Monroe County Public Library.
It was always entertaining and pretty much always a pain in my ass.
Michael White is the longtime director of what's now known as Community Access Television Services, or CATS. White found himself playing the role of both accomplice and censor. For instance, a segment in Episode 7.
It was called Coprophagia Corner. It was basically people that receive sexual gratification through involvement in sort of an excretory function. They printed out a picture they had found on the internet of a woman sitting atop a man's head, excreting.
And you can probably see where this is going. White decided the image had to be blacked out, but he did go before a library review panel to argue that J&B's descriptions of coprophagia were protected speech and should play on television. This is on the same channel with city council meetings and religious programs.
You know, I'm at sort of loggerheads with these people with MLSs, Master of Library Science, who really specialize in this. And in the meantime, I believe that show ran with this kind of screed from J&B just about what idiots we were for not allowing, you know, pooping into the man's mouth on local television. So when I describe them as being a pain in the ass, they were damn good at it.
Bart Everson began his tenure at Katz doing community service after he got busted streaking across the IU campus. When he and Nickel started producing Rocks in 1992, it was just two 20-somethings sitting in their basement talking about their original theme, which was mixed drinks. Everson's co-worker, Wade Powell, stumbled on the show by chance one night.
I approached Bart the next day at work, and I said, hey, I saw you on TV. And he said to me, you know, that was pretty cool. We got some really cool stuff planned for the next episode. I just thought, episode? What episode? It was just you and this guy in the basement just talking about stuff and getting drunk. Who knew? You know?
As Rocks became more popular, Everson and Nickel began taking the library's cameras out of the basement. They filmed themselves and their friends mixing drinks on the Tulip Trestle in Greene County, getting kicked out of the Seminary Square Kroger, and lighting birthday candles in a urinal on the IU campus.
We're going to put out the flame by flushing.
They attracted attention beyond Bloomington, partly because they were pioneers in distributing their content online. After the marijuana episode, Rocks was mentioned on MTV and The Howard Stern Show. A 1995 article in the Indianapolis Star described Rocks as equal parts slacker diary, societal satire, and improvisational theater.
I'll tell you what's going on. We had a little parade. We're about fun, we're about change, we're about anti-stagnation.
That was Christy Paxson, one of several regular characters on the show. Tangled within the antics that were shocking to many viewers, the crew of Rocks conveyed some serious goals: to portray daily life the way they really experienced it, and thus to undermine myths and norms they didn't care for.
It's not so much that the controversy is what makes the show interesting, is that we couldn't make a show that is about us and our lives without it being controversial.
Everson said that in a WTIU interview in the 90s. And almost exactly 25 years after the show first aired on Katz, the provocative mission is still alive, although the tone is different.
I wanted to begin with a little bit of context of the kind of broad social moment in which...
That's Everson. Earlier this month, he was beginning a talk at the venue Fine Arts and Gifts in downtown Bloomington.
You have traditional theists, spiritualists, and secularists.
Everson lives in New Orleans now, but he was in Bloomington promoting a new book. He speaks a little softer, and he says he's more humble than when he was first producing Rocks. But his work has an underlying message that's familiar. Basically, a lot of people are getting something wrong. In this case, he's talking about what he calls atheist religion.
Frankly, a lot of people don't realize that that's a possibility, especially here in the West, where we have the dominance of Christianity, to such a point that a lot of people just think of, when they say religion, what they really mean is Christianity.
I spoke with Everson earlier this month during his visit to Bloomington. We talked on the courthouse lawn. His book is called Spinning in Place. Everson is a longtime atheist, and the book is composed of his reflections on pagan observances and the seasons, solstices, equinoxes, and what are called cross-quarter days. And like Rocks, it's autobiographical. He writes about growing up in a Lutheran church in central Indiana, then aggressively rejecting religion as an adolescent, and returning to a secular spirituality in his fifth decade.
After my daughter was born, everything kind of changed for me. I wanted her to have a more well-rounded and in-depth appreciation for the variety of human experience, just what it means to be a human and alive on the planet, how people have thought about that.
Everson writes about bringing his then 2-year-old daughter to a pagan celebration of Lammas, a late July, early August holiday. He's particularly taken with the Lammas ritual of baking bread, which he says can connect the baker to history, science, culture, and nature. In general, he's an enthusiast for rituals, which he writes can help a person, quote, feel the resonance echoing through the corridors of time.
That's also, you know, part of my idea about spirituality and religion is that it can be based on the natural world, that nature is enough to kind of satisfy all the requirements for what you would call a religious or spiritual expression.
Everson's work has always been what you could call political. In Rocks, he and Nickel cover anarchism and, of course, marijuana laws. And they parody Bloomington's anti-abortion protesters with a group they call the More Life Coalition.
Save the sperm! Save the egg! We demand an end to menstruation.
menstruation, which kills potential babies at the rate of one per month, with approximately 2 billion menstruating women in the world.
The book is less satirical, but the politics are clear and urgent.
I desperately hope that there are changes that come about from a shift in our consciousness and a shift in our spirituality. I think that establishing kind of a religious practice and a religious tradition that puts an emphasis on the earth and says that that's the prime value that we have, is living in harmony with the earth, would be huge.
Ever since Creative Work has drawn a variety of responses during the past quarter century, not much money, but a good deal of high praise, enthusiasm, and in some ways admiration. Of course, there have also been what you could call more negative reactions. Probably not surprisingly, he seems to enjoy those too.
You're lucky to get a response a lot of times. You like whisper down a well and then, you know, wait for an echo. Do you hear anything? Do you hear anything at all? A lot of times you don't, and you just keep doing it because you're driven to do it. So to get a response of any sort is always a blessing.
Everson's new book, which again is called Spinning in Place, is available on Amazon. He and Nickel are still working, very slowly, on more Rocks episodes. Number 99 has been in production for a couple years. Most of the episodes are free to watch at rocks.com. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
For more on Bart Everson's work, stay tuned to WFHB at the Daily Local News. Our weekly lecture series, Standing Room Only, will feature the talk he gave at the venue earlier this month. That show begins at 5:30.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Are you on Facebook? Well, watch out. Scammers and swindlers have figured out how to impersonate your friends. If you fall for it, they can rip you off, but good. Here's how it can work. A Facebook user named Shelley was on Messenger, and up came Deborah, a longtime friend. Deborah's message told her about a government grant she'd gotten through another Facebook user. Shelley contacted that fellow, who confirmed Deborah's story, and offered her $100,000 if she just sent in a processing fee of 1,500 smackers first. Well, Shelley fell for it, and when no money arrived, she contacted Deborah directly, and they both discovered that Deborah's account had been hacked. Now, Facebook took action immediately once this was reported, and quickly took down the scammer's account and Deborah's too. Shelley was out $1,500, and Deborah can't get back into her old profile with lots of photos and family memories. CBS News got hold of this story and turned up a whole network of fake Facebook accounts offering grants. They all had pictures of the supposed agents, but the pictures all turned out to be stolen from other Facebook accounts. A little more digital digging located the scammers in Lagos, Nigeria. Facebook says it has a dedicated team working to identify and stop these kinds of things, but they can't do more than play catch-up. And the fraudsters aren't the only ones digging into your online privacy. The government is, too. The Electronic Frontier Foundation recently rated all the major tech companies on protecting their users' online privacy. And the results are surprising. They rated each company on 5 criteria. Do they follow the industry standard best practices for privacy, which includes requiring a warrant to release user content? Do they tell users when the government asks about them? Do they promise not to sell your information? Do they comply with government gag orders? And do they want the National Security Agency to reform its notorious 702 surveillance program? The worst companies were AT&T, Comcast, T-Mobile, and Verizon, with Amazon almost as bad. These folks are perfectly happy to tell the government anything it wants to know about you without ever telling you what they're doing. Facebook was actually rated pretty good, along with Google, LinkedIn, Microsoft, and Yahoo. All those companies do knuckle under to government gag orders. There were 9 online companies that got top ratings in every category: Adobe, Credo, Dropbox, Lyft, Pinterest, Sonic, Uber, Wicker, and WordPress. You can find out more about the Electronic Frontier Foundation and their ratings of online companies at their website, EFF.org. Look for Who's Got Your Back to see the details of their online privacy survey. That's EFF.org. When you share your life on the internet, you're not just sharing it with your family and friends. Remember that, and beware. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Arjun Balasundaram, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Joe Crawford.
Our engineer today is Dan Witherid. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. From WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Thank you for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. Stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.